Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now, on Last Call, Tesla's tumble. What should Elon Musk do to reverse the recent fall? Famed entrepreneur, Elon confidant David Sacks will join us. An urgent plea, tension spike around Ukrainian strikes on Russian oil refineries. We're going to hear from hedge fund legend Kyle Bass on what may come next. The moment of truth. Investors taking a roller coaster ride amid a Trump social media merger. And wait till you hear what may be fueling it. Plus, click. A new report should bring a major wake-up call for all the streaming giants. And you, yeah, let's light this candle. A planned return to supersonic air travel, taking a big leap forward. All that and more over the hour. So as always, belly up, buckle up. Last Call is up right now. Oh, good evening here, good afternoon out west, and welcome to Friday, or as I call it, No Tie Friday. I'm Brian Sullivan. All that and more coming up in our hour. But first up on Last Call, the very good week for your money. The record rally, yeah, it took a little bit of a breather today. The S&P and NASDAQ or Dow fell a little bit. The NASDAQ, though, did manage to pull out yet another record close. But even with those drops, the Dow and the S&P scored their best week so far this year. The NASDAQ, not far behind, and oh, Dow 40,000, very much in striking distance next week. So a big question is lingering. Which stocks will get it past that historic milestone? Well, our good friends and colleagues at CNBC Pro have a new list of the names that Wall Street believes are poised to help do it. And believe me, there are some surprises. Among them, Boeing, and its no good, terrible, very bad year. United Healthcare, they just got hacked. Nike, not good numbers there. Apple, they're being sued by the DOJ. And, well, there's Amazon. Most, of course, of those names, not exactly high performers this year. But the rankings are based on the average Wall Street analyst price targets that imply at least 10% upside over the next year. Remember, Boeing and many of those names are still on many of the top picks lists of analysts that we showed you exclusively here at the beginning of the year. By the way, you want to see the full list? Well, you can either rush up to your TV and scan that QR code, or you can go to cnbcpro.com. Oh, by a little bit of food for thought there. But what are the overall next big macro moves to make with your money coming into next week? What's the technical setup? What's the Fed's role? Joining us now is Fairlead Strategies founder and managing partner Katie Stockton. She looks at the charts, and senior VP and private wealth advisor Morgan Stanley Private Wealth Management, Katarina Simonetti, more on the fundamental side. So, Katarina, I want to start with you because we have a rather late-breaking headline on the Federal Reserve tonight. Rafael Bostic, who is the president of the Atlanta Fed, said at a conference just a short time ago that he expects just one quarter-point rate cut by the Fed this year. He was previously projecting two, so a little more hawkish maybe than some of his colleagues, but Bostic's a powerful guy. If we get just one cut, not two or three, what does that mean for the markets?
Well, Brian, thank you for having me on the show. You know, certainly the stronger than expected labor market and, you know, general strength of the economy are, you know, they're both hard to ignore, not to mention that inflation is not quite at where the Fed would like for it to see. So it is possible that we're going to get less than expected rate cuts. We are still expecting three rate cuts for the year. But with that said, what we tell our clients to do is to avoid any drastic portfolio changes based on what Fed will or will not do. Because at the end of the day, they are going to give us some type of rate cuts this year. You know, we know to expect that, you know, and we need to focus instead on the rate cuts on companies that have competitive positioning, quality cash flows, that are positioned in the way that, you know, in the chart that you just showed, you know, the attractively and with upside potential versus some of the companies that had a big run up, because, you know, we haven't seen the rally at every aspect of this market. So there are definitely buying opportunities.
I want to go back to you, Katarina, before I go to Katie, because last night our lead market panel sort of talked about how the Federal Reserve was everything. That, you know, the rate cuts were kind of the whole gasoline that is being thrown on the market fire. It doesn't sound like you would agree with that necessarily, right? The rate cuts are important, but are you saying that if we get two, not three, one, not two, whatever it might be, that the markets can still do well?
Brian, this is exactly what I'm saying. Rate cuts absolutely are important, but what we should really be focused on is earnings. You know, we see the prices, we see the levels that the stocks are trading at. The question is, are these levels going to be supported by the earnings, especially in the next earnings seasons? Because it's going to be up to the earnings to push to continue pushing the stock prices up. So regardless of what Fed is going to do, I think that the focus should be on earnings more than on how many rate cuts we're going to get this year.
All right, Katie, on the chart side, obviously, I mean, in my mind, I just see the S&P and the NASDAQ going up, up, up. Are we at the top bound? How do the charts look? Do you see more momentum ahead?
Well, we have new all-time highs, and really there's nothing bearish about that. I would agree with Katarina that it's earnings that drive long-term trends in stock prices. So we want those long-term trends from a technical perspective on our side, and indeed they are. I mean, we have positive momentum, not just long-term, but now even short-term, driven by the Fed announcement this week. So I do think the Fed, of course, is very important and certainly affects market sentiment. But guess what? So is NVIDIA. So there's a lot of influences on market sentiment right now. And the dynamics are very bullish in terms of momentum. And with the fresh breakouts that we saw this week, we think it can continue.
Yeah, is there anything worrisome about the charts? Are we overbought in any way? Is there anything that's sticking out to you that we know you're optimistic, but what do we need to watch for? What are some of the signs that you're looking for, Katie?
You know, overbought is not necessarily a bad thing. Overbought is a byproduct of positive momentum. And if you saw a breakout that didn't have an overbought condition, that would be very unusual. It's when the overbought reading gives way to downturns on the chart. So effectively a little loss of momentum that we take issue with that. And obviously we don't have that at this time. I think the biggest risk to the market is sentiment, because sentiment by some metrics is overly bullish or too greedy right now. And you can see that in some of the very, very steep uptrends in the market. But we can keep the moving averages on our side and the technical indicators on our side to manage risk of a big turn down. And I think even something as simple as a 20-day moving average, you just keep that on your side and you can rest assured that you're going to miss the next big drawdown.
Yeah, I mean, the charts look good. The fundamentals for a lot of companies have looked good. The markets look good. I don't want to jinx it, so I'm going to let it go there. Katarina Simonetti, Katie Stockton, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. All right, let's take a look at our studs and duds in the S&P for the week. The biggest winner, chipmaker Micron, up 18%. They had an earnings beat driven by, yeah, what else, AI. FedEx, rather surprised earnings beat there. And AI play Arista Networks, also with a big week. The biggest decliners in the S&P this week, Lululemon, disappointing guidance. Accenture, they're actually warning of an IT spending slowdown. I mean, kind of put that in the back of your mind. And EPAM Systems, down again today. Morgan Stanley cutting their price target. All right, we are just getting started on a Friday and on deck. Can Elon Musk find an exit for Tesla's bumpy run as of late? We're going to hear from famed entrepreneur and Elon confidant David Sachs about that and more. And later on, who's really fueling the wild ride for shares of the Trump Truth Social SPAC? Mr. Herb Greenberg is on the case, and he's got some surprising answers. You'll hear him coming up.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
All right, let's get to tomorrow's news tonight. First up, the Wall Street Journal reporting that the FAA is stepping up oversight of United Airlines. Follows a series of safety issues these past couple of weeks. United shares down slightly after hours. Next up, Anthropic. That is a red-hot AI startup that is lining up a new slate of investors, but passing on taking any money from Saudi Arabia. Huh. Kate Rooney joining us now with more on Anthropic. Not a household name, but wow, this is a massive private company.
Yeah, Brian, this is one of the buzziest startups here in Silicon Valley. Sources tell me that Anthropic and that team was worried about national security risk around this. They ruled out taking any money from the Saudi Public Investment Fund, the PIF. Despite their deep pockets and appetite to invest in AI, the PIF has more than $900 billion under management. It has been focused on tech investing as Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, looks to diversify the oil-rich nation's economy. CNBC confirmed that the Saudis are also looking to launch a $40 billion AI fund with Andreessen Horowitz, another venture firm, which the Times first reported. All of this has to do with a newly available stake in Anthropic that I'm told is actively right now being shopped around to other sovereign wealth funds and new investors. The reason this Anthropic stake is for sale in the first place, flashback to FTX, it belongs to FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried's failed crypto exchange. It's being unloaded as part of that bankruptcy process. FTX invested illegally at the time using customer money. What started as a $500 million stake 3 years ago is now worth more than $1 billion after the recent AI boom. The proceeds there are going to be used to pay back FTX customers. Anthropic, like I mentioned, Brian, one of the hottest tech investments here in Silicon Valley. It has raised more than $7 billion in the past few years from Amazon, Alphabet, many others out here. Its large language model, or LLM, competes with OpenAI's ChatGPT, and these Class B shares at stake don't come with voting rights. They are being sold at the same valuation as the company's last round, which is around $18.4 billion, according to sources. While the Anthropic team did preemptively tell bankers that they would not accept Saudi money, sources now tell me that they do not plan to turn down other sovereign funds that are invested, including the UAE's Mubadala. Brian, I've struggled to say that name all day, but that's their sovereign wealth fund.
All you got to say is a lot of money. How about that? I think the PIF, exactly. I met somebody actually recently. They said it was like $960 billion. It's like a nation state. So
yeah, a lot of it's going into tech, and they would be one of the biggest AI investors and tech investors behind SoftBank if that does end up launching.
And you notice I didn't try to say it either. Kate Rooney, thank you very much.
I know. I was like, that's going to...
Have a great weekend out west, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, in the meantime, Tesla ending the week ending so far the quarter on a sour note. Shares falling again today following reports that the EV maker is cutting production in China. The stock is now down more than 30% this year, leading some investors maybe to question Elon Musk's commitment to the success of the company. Are these investor concerns warranted? Are they overblown? What does Tesla, what does Musk need to do? Joining us now tonight with more is Kraft Ventures founder and partner David Sachs. David, we got to get through a lot. I want to talk about Apple. I want to talk about TikTok as well. I know you got strong views on those. I know you know Elon Musk very, very well. It's had a hell of a run the last number of years. Yeah, tough run this year. Does something need to be, quote, fixed at Tesla?
I don't think so. Not in the way that these carping critics are suggesting. It sounds to me like Tesla has intensifying competition in China. And then there's also some softening demand in the US and Europe for EVs generally. And so I think they're facing some cyclical issues here and they're going to have to address those. But do I think they need to make a deeper change than that? No, I think that'd be a huge mistake. And these critics who are basically saying that Elon isn't spending enough time at Tesla. I mean, they weren't saying that when the stock was going up and he was doing the exact same thing. So from my standpoint, nothing's really changed about his commitment or activities.
Now, this is going to be a homer question. I fully admit it, David, so we can debate this. we have had some guests that have come on the show who've suggested, and this is a little bit weird, a lot of people may not realize Tesla, unlike pretty much every other company in America, doesn't have a PR department. There's no media relations people, nothing. And whatever people think of that, the critics have said on this program, David, that not having PR can cause articles and people to say whatever they want and no one's pushing back. It can't just be Elon alone on X. There should be a more, you know, planned response from the media relations side to counter, you know, or at least say, no, that's not really right. What do you think about that?
I thought the critics didn't want Elon wasting his time. I mean, if you have a PR department, they're going to be fielding a million requests every day, and they're going to be going to Elon to try and get comment on a million articles. And I don't think that's a good use of his time. I mean, Elon is able to communicate directly with hundreds of millions of followers on X, and he's able to get his story out that way, and he's able to promote the brand that way. And it's been incredible for Tesla. I mean, look at the marketing they're able to do without spending any money. So I think they have a unique approach to marketing and PR, and I think it works for them.
Yeah, I think he's got a couple followers on X too, if I'm not mistaken, David. All right, yes, I want to switch gears. Apple, the DOJ filing an antitrust case along with 16 states against Apple, kind of a la Microsoft. It feels like that a little bit in 1998. What is your take on this case, the DOJ and the states going after Apple, one of the most successful and I think fairly widely admired companies in America, if not the world?
It is. I mean, it is a highly admired company and it makes great products, but it also has a lot of market power. And I think that it is a core government responsibility to prevent monopolists, or in this case, a duopolist, from using its market power in anti-competitive ways. And I think that most people in Silicon Valley who are not directly affiliated with Apple think it's a good thing that the government has filed this lawsuit and they're kind of brushing Apple back from the plate a little bit in terms of using its market power in abusive ways. I think Apple is always on the edge of going too far in terms of using its market power. And I think a lawsuit like this every once in a while is good to kind of just keep them in check.
Oh, surprising take there, David, from you. Before we go, I want to talk about TikTok. You've been a very vocal opponent on X and elsewhere of that current legislation targeting TikTok, even calling it a, quote, enemy websites ban. And I think, David, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but the idea being that whatever people think of TikTok, maybe they hate TikTok and they want it to go away, or they want, you know, U.S. ownership. You're worried that this could be mission creep, that you do this to TikTok and then you've got the ability to do it to X, to do it to anybody you may want.
Absolutely. I mean, the bill explicitly applies not just to TikTok, not just even to mobile apps, but to all websites, all content sharing websites on the internet, even those owned by American companies, if they have a million users a month. That's basically what the bill provides. As long as those websites are supposedly controlled by a foreign adversary, and the definition of controlled means subject to the direction of, which I think is a very vague statement. And I think it could be turned on American websites. I think it could be turned on somebody like Elon Musk, and a creative attorney general could try and make Elon divest X, or it could be turned against Trump's ownership of Truth Social. So I think, you know, we live in a very McCarthyite age. We hear these accusations all the time as part of our political discourse that people who disagree with you somehow are working for a foreign power. This bill would operationalize that type of rhetoric by allowing the government to ban, again, not just apps, but websites too, that are supposedly under the direction of a foreign power. I think this bill is too broad and too sweeping and subject to abuse.
Would you be more accepting of it if they could more narrowly target the bill so it was pretty obvious that there wouldn't be that potential for overreach? Or maybe just, and I guess where I'm confused is, why don't they just kind of go after it on a CFIUS, which, you know, sort of a national threat type charge?
Yeah, exactly. Look, I think if they could make this bill much more narrowly tailored to focus on TikTok, that would make it more acceptable. But I do have to say that I hear this accusation a lot that TikTok is collecting large amounts of data on Americans and that poses a national security threat because they're sharing it with the CCP. But I've yet to see hard proof of that assertion. And I do think that before the government effectively shuts down an application or a company, it should provide some proof. I think we, the public, are entitled to know what exactly TikTok is doing, what exactly is the national security threat here, because there's something like 150 million Americans who really love using this app. And I think they're going to be wondering why this app got shut down if the government does this without providing an explanation.
Well, maybe they were too busy with a 1,000-page, $1.2 trillion omnibus bill being shoved through on a Friday night, David. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing that out there.
Look, if they're going to ban a highly popular site and app like TikTok, provide us with the proof that this, in fact, is a national security threat. I'm open to believing that, but I just need to see some proof. I have not seen any proof. And they go, and like I said, it's worse than that because they're going after American websites and applications, too.
David Sacks, always with interesting insight and takes. And David, I know it's Friday. We appreciate you coming on. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
Good to see you.
All right, still ahead. Grab the Dramamine. Who's really behind the insane ride for the aforementioned Trump social media SPAC? Mr. Herb Greenberg is here with answers. Next.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
All right, welcome back. It is Friday, thank goodness. So it is also time for our exclusive insider buying segment, the five companies who saw the most stock buys by C-suite executives this week. And as always, the data coming from our friends at Verity Data. And Verity, by the way, does note this will likely be the last week for a while, because remember, there's a blackout on insider buying around the end of the quarter and the beginning of the next quarter because of earnings. But that said, we do have five names this week, nothing huge. But five names, so let's go count you down 5 to 1. Stock 5, Celanese. Couple of insider buys there, totaling $219,000. The fourth most insider buying, Axos Financial. Ticker is AX, kind of cool. Board member making her first buy since joining the company, about a $248,000 purchase there. Stock 3 is the CEO of Ball Corp, the packaging company, buying $249,000 worth of the stock. Verity notes, this gentleman bought as the stock was coming off some recent lows. First buy, by the way, for the CEO since the December of 2022. Now to the top two. Stock 2, a name you know. That is Crocs, the shoe company. A board member buying just a little more than our last insider buy. And the new board member, by the way, buying into strength. Crocs is up 60% in 6 months. By the way, third time Crocs has been on our insider buy list in the 2.5 to 3 years we've been doing this. And the biggest insider buy of the week, a company called Vici Properties. A $288,000 buy by the chairman of the board, the first insider buy at Vici in 2 years. Vici, not a household name, but you know what they own. A ton of gaming and entertainment properties like the MGM and the Venetian and Caesars in Vegas. They're a REIT. So there you go. Top five insider buys of the week, Celanese, Axos Financial, Ball Corp, Crocs, and Vici Properties. Insider buying probably come back in, I don't know, late April as earnings season begins to wind down. In the meantime, former President Donald Trump might be getting a whole lot richer. Digital World Acquisition Corp shareholders approving a merger with Trump Media. That is the Truth Social parent company. The new company would be called Trump Media and Technology Group, and it would trade under the ticker DJT, because of course it would. And get this, the deal could net Donald Trump $3 billion or more, since he would have nearly 80 million shares in the newly merged company. Been a wild year for DWAC. Stock is up 177%, even after falling 13% on today's news, the worst performance in 2 months. And your next guest calls it a meme stock on steroids. That is our friend, CNBC contributor Herb Greenberg, also the author of Herb Greenberg on the Street on Substack. Herb, I know you hate politics. We're not going down the political road, but it's got the former guy's name on it. And you know what that does? Generates all kinds of passion and interest and other stuff. You know that online.
Rumors and innuendo and conspiracy theories. You name it.
You hate it. You love it. It's insane.
Yeah. You know, it's the question of who's been buying this. And, you know, the reason I say meme stock on steroids is because the best anybody can come up with is that the only people buying this are the same people who bought all those stocks back in 2021. And it's based on what you can see on any stock message board where people are basically saying, you know, to the moon, supporting, you know, it's all about, it is all about politics to many of these people. And I think that that's what you've had. And I think that in this case turns into a no-win for everybody, but possibly depending upon how the stock goes, Donald Trump. Because if he ends up selling, obviously, that's no win for investors in this thing. So you get another one of those meme stock moments where people just bid it up. Because typically with a SPAC, Brian, you have a situation where you've had so many going forward. One of the biggest games is the professionals would buy the stock. And when the deal would be voted on, as was the case today, they'd vote no. Then they'd get their money back. And the company wouldn't get much money. Very different here. So the real issue is you have potentially, you know, retail investors have been buying. There are a bunch of conspiracy theories out there, I have to say, about other people possibly buying. I'm not saying anything about that, but I do have to say, based on my reporting, I see that.
Well, listen, there's a lot of political people on social media, and some of them are not as quite as schooled in the stock stuff as you may be. And of course, he's got this bond, and a lot of people are saying, well, there you go. He's a billionaire now, and he's got this, and no problem with the bond. Well,
no.
The problem
no.
is that if you want to raise the cash, if you got it, you got to dump $500 million in stock, which on that market cap is going to crush the stock.
It crushes the stock, and that, by the way, is only assuming he gets the waiver that he'd have to get from the SPAC sponsors and his board of directors, which I'm sure they would give him. But, you know, that assumes also that by then the stock, which was what, down 13% today, doesn't go down further because then it becomes obviously worth less and less as he sells or how they sell it. And I want to point something out here to remember, because if you just strip away Donald Trump, let's not forget, you have to look at the business of the company. And in this case, you have a company that has revenues about $3.5 million with a market value of $1.3 billion. Compare that to
rent. Wait, the revenue is $3 million with an M? I'm not on it. I don't know anything about it. $3
million? Based on what I've read, it's a few million dollars. It's based on what I've been able to find. It's a few million dollars, but a market cap of $1.3 billion. Compare that with Reddit, Brian. Reddit has a market value of $7.3 billion, but it has $800 million in revenue. So you can see the gulf in a very difficult industry known as social media. So they've got a long way to come. It's nothing more than right now I see it as buy the rumor, sell the news, unless somebody else comes along with a bucket to keep the shares propped up.
I'm going to paraphrase Herb Greenberg. I think the message is be careful out there on the stock. Herb Greenberg, thank you as always, my man. Have a good weekend.
Sure.
All right, coming up, a rather bizarre demand from the White House to Ukraine to stop attacking parts of Russia. Yeah, stop attacking. We'll get Kyle Bass on that and more next.
Being a change maker reflects our sense of urgency across the country as we set about to improve the lives of cancer patients and their families. This year in the United States, there'll be more than 2 million people who hear for the first time that they have a cancer diagnosis, and more than 600,000 individuals who will lose their life from cancer. I'm so interested in not just medicine, but also the business of medicine and how we can accelerate progress through cancer by adopting a business mindset toward doing good in the world.
All right, welcome back. New developments tonight in the Russia-Ukraine war. As we covered here previously, Ukrainian drones striking a number of key Russian oil refineries last week, causing oil prices to go up a little bit. But now get this. The FT is reporting that the White House is asking Ukraine to stop striking refineries in Russia because it worries those attacks could further drive up oil prices and lead to potentially greater retaliation from Russia. So far this year, oil prices are up 12%, due in part to that Russia-Ukraine war. And adding to the already combustible situation in the region tonight is just an awful story. A horrific shooting earlier today at a Moscow concert hall. Several gunmen literally walked in and opened fire on innocent civilians. As of now, 40 are dead, more than 100 wounded. It is not clear who is responsible, but ISIS, remember them? ISIS has claimed responsibility in a social media post that is not confirmed. U.S. intelligence officials are now confirming the claim, but not that ISIS was responsible, but it makes sense. So as tensions rise in the region, what exactly comes next? Joining us now is founder and chief investment officer of Heyman Capital Management, Kyle Bass. Kyle, thanks for joining us. I know you're in transit, but I needed to get you on this story. First off, I know people hate Putin. They hate what he's doing. They can hate the Russian government. These are just innocent people in Russia. What a just terrible story that happened. That said, when I read that the White House is basically asking, according to the FT, asking Ukraine to stop attacking Russian oil refineries, I was surprised, but not surprised, because we want Ukraine to kick Russia's tail, and we want to hit them where it hurts. So it's a little weird.
Well, I mean, Brian, you know, you follow the oil markets close enough. We've only replaced about 18% of our reserves this year, as far as the crude oil that's been produced. Typically, we replace 80-90%. So I think the new green initiative is starting to kind of become an all or nothing. And I think the thing that the Biden administration is most worried about is, I mean, one of the key knocks against Biden is inflation over his term has really been about 40%, despite what the Fed's reported or the BLS has reported. So think about this. When we sanctioned Russia, they were really hollow sanctions. We sanctioned 10% of the oligarchs, and we didn't touch his energy business. We let the blood flow to continue to flow to the tumor, which is Putin. And, you know, he sells 8 million barrels a day with oil at $80. You guys can do math. The guy makes $500 million a day for his war machine. And we didn't have the guts enough to sanction his energy companies and his banks and remove them from the SWIFT system. So we left Putin intact, even post his invasion, because we were simply afraid of the rising gas prices at the pump. And here we are again, begging one of the world's madmen, the number one war criminal in the world. We're begging the people that he has invaded to leave his energy business alone, which I just think it's short-sighted.
Well, I want to be clear. It's an FT story. I've got some sources. I want to do a little more digging on this. But because to your point, if indeed it is accurate and we're saying, hey, you know what? Kick Russia's tail. Go after their military, but don't touch the oil because we got an election coming up and we don't want to have gas prices go up. I mean, I hope that the story is not accurate. I mean, let's just put it that way, because we want to beat Russia however we want to beat Russia, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think the FT's editors would allow the story to run. I think you and I both know that they probably got a pretty good source. Or they wouldn't run such a story. So yes, but Brian, think back to World War II and the precursors to World War II. You know, we had Halifax and Chamberlain, begging for meetings with Hitler and begging these invasions to stop. And you know, when you saw invasions happen, whether it was Hitler or someone else in World War II, you know, we left supply lines for both energy and food intact, hoping that World War II wouldn't metastasize. And so Europe did as well. And that didn't get us anywhere. So look, appeasing madmen never works. And here we are appeasing a madman again, Brian. And you and I both know that that's not a sound tactic. I think if you think about battlefield tactics, we should stop the blood flowing to the tumor. We should cut off the energy and the food and press the hard button. The hard button is higher prices for a while we win this thing. I think the current strategy is just a losing strategy.
Yeah, Russia bought, as I reported, I think exclusively about a year ago, they bought all these old super tankers, called it the Ghost Fleet, so they can kind of get around the sanctions. These are old ships. It's probably going to be an environmental disaster at some point, like Nord Stream. Very quickly, I don't know if you heard David Sachs earlier in the program. We were talking about the TikTok legislation. David's point is, you know, you can hate TikTok, but he doesn't like the legislation's plan because he thinks it can be used to sort of weaponize government against other websites, maybe Twitter, maybe whatever it might be, Meta, who knows. What is your take on the proposed TikTok ban?
I think that's a red herring, Brian. I think the tech community has this wrong. I think that if you read the text of the bill, it talks about foreign adversaries and the DNI clearly describes who are the number one threats to U.S. national security are, who the malign global players are. And in this order, it is China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. You know, Twitter, whether it's run by Elon Musk or another American, all we're saying here is that these social media services that beam straight into our kids' bedrooms can't be controlled by hostile foreign adversaries. I think that's very clear. I think that is a policy that should have been implemented long ago. We would never allow Russia or China or North Korea to own a broadcast channel, Brian, but we haven't updated the definition of broadcast in a long time. And these social media companies do just that. They broadcast directly in to half of America. And it's the most dangerous mind control machine ever built. And China's Communist Party runs the algorithm. And the evidence of the fact that China's Ministry of Commerce made a public statement saying they would violently oppose giving up the technological advantage or the algorithm to TikTok. And you say, wait a minute, I thought TikTok was a private company. I thought TikTok wasn't sharing data with China. Why is China's government opposed to a divestiture? And again, Brian, if you're an investor, if you and I owned shares in ByteDance and we wanted to own shares in TikTok without the Chinese Communist Party owning it, if we did effectuate that spinoff and we sold it to an American interest, the value of the enterprise would skyrocket if it were a 100% American-owned, American-run enterprise and it wanted to go public or be sold here. This is a value-unlocking transaction. The fact that they're fighting it tooth and nail tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. And by the way, there was a new report. It was on, I think it was on Axios. I posted it to X and LinkedIn that 17% of kids just are apparently constantly scrolling, and a lot of incidents of self-harm just come up in their feed constantly. And you wonder how we might be messing with, you know, teens and kids and people's minds. We'll see what happens. Kyle Bass, we'll let you get to wherever you need to go in that fine automobile that you are in. Kyle, have a great weekend. Thank you both. Thank you very much, my man.
My pleasure.
Appreciate
that.
Thank you, Brian. All right, coming up, the new report that should have every streaming media exec snapping to attention. All right, welcome back. A new report that some major media companies might want to pay attention to. It has to do with Gen Z media consumption. And listen to this. Nearly half of Generation Z say they prefer social videos and live streams over streaming TV and movie content. In the last 6 months, 52% of Gen Zers have canceled a paid streaming service, and 59% say they often watch TV shows or movies on streaming only after hearing about them online or maybe from friends first. That is all according to Deloitte's 2024 Digital Media Trends Report. Let's bring in Laura Martin, Needham Media Analyst, to break down which companies stand to gain, stand to lose. Either way I strip it out, Laura, this does not sound like great news for the established legacy media companies.
I think you're exactly right, Brian. What we have is like 80% of Gen Z uses YouTube every single day, and TikTok even more, even a higher percent. So really where the younger people like under 25 are getting their news and their information and even their recommendations for what to view is all from social media. So that's great for YouTube. It's great for Meta. It's really bad for low-tech content creators like Warner Brothers, like Paramount, because they don't have the tech stack to actually personalize any of these recommendations or shoppable. The audience really wants shoppable content, and the old legacy media don't have the tech stack to implement any of that stuff.
What do they do then? I mean, Warner Brothers Discovery, Paramount, NBC, I mean, these are multi-billion dollar corporations. What's the fix?
So the fix is they have to do joint ventures with these tech-first startups. So like Netflix doesn't have to do this. They have a really technologically sophisticated, but we need to see more deals between like Meta and Warner or Paramount and TikTok or something. We need more tech brought into the content businesses because discovery of new content is actually all moving to social media.
This sounds like it's Google's world and we're just kind of living in it.
Google and Amazon. Yep, I think that's right, Brian.
Well, why Amazon? I mean, Google's got YouTube. Everybody's watching not just scripted stuff on YouTube, YouTube TV, but, you know, all the subscriptions and channels that everybody has. What does Amazon have?
So where advertising is moving and Amazon is at the forefront is when you buy an ad, can you connect it to the sale of a product? Guess who does that best in class? Amazon. So when you buy an ad on Amazon Prime Video, because 100% of their video now has ads, you can tie it to a sale from that ad on Amazon. That's called like a closed loop attribution. So it's super valuable, more valuable than even the YouTube video where you don't really know how many products you sold.
Wow. Interesting stats, a little scary from this side of the camera, but it is what it is, and you have to adapt. Laura Martin, and Needham, you're the best. Look forward to seeing you again next week. Thank you, Laura.
Bye-bye, Brian.
All right, let's get now to our quicker than the ticker, all the best of the rest of the headlines. Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. America overtaking China as the world's top spot for millionaires and billionaires. According to a new report, more than 5.5 million Americans have liquid investable assets of over $1 billion, up 62% in the past 10 years. Speaking of billionaires, Jerry Seinfeld's net worth now more than $1 billion, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. Syndication of his eponymous show, Seinfeld, estimated to be valued at $465 million. One of the hottest commodities in the world is cocoa. Yeah, cocoa prices hitting another all-time high. Yeah, just in time for Easter. They're approaching $9,000 per metric ton. Dry weather, a big problem. Sotheby's hosting Sports Auction Week. The week will start April 5th. Among the items, a Kobe Bryant Lakers jersey from the 2009 NBA Finals that could go up to $2.5 million. And the most popular American dog breed is French. That's right. The French Bulldog, the most commonly registered purebred dog last year, according to the American Kennel Club. And that's all the time we've got. All right, coming up, the big leap forward toward the return of supersonic air travel. All right, welcome back. And here is a cool story for your Friday. Aviation startup Boom Supersonic announcing a successful first test flight of its XB-1 supersonic jet. That, of course, faster than the speed of sound, like the days of the old Concorde. So the question is, could commercial supersonic air travel be on the horizon and be there sooner than we think? Phil LeBeau joining us now with more. I don't know about you, Phil. You travel as more than anybody I know. This seems like a pretty cool and exciting story.
Yes, but I hate to rain on everybody's parade who might be sitting there saying, wait a second, when are we going to see this? A couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, as we show you the test flight video that was shot by Boom today out in the Mojave Desert, this was a prototype test jet. It is one-third the size of what the supersonic jet they eventually plan to build. One-third the size, did not hit a speed greater than 283 miles, well below supersonic. It is only in the air for 12 minutes. Nonetheless, it is a milestone because they are testing supersonic technology. Technology they plan to put into the first full-size supersonic jet. When will that be built? Well, here's the timeline according to Boom. They've got a plant they're building in North Carolina. They expect to begin production perhaps in 2026. Then in 2027-28 is when they are targeting the first flight for the Boom Supersonic Overture. That's the name of the plane. Commercial service by 2030. And according to the CEO and founder Blake Scholl, there's plenty of appetite from airlines to have supersonic service.
The airlines are looking for a way to differentiate and, you know, to go beyond brand A and brand B and offer passengers something that's different, better, then ultimately will enable a lot more travel. I think we're going to see a lot more transatlantic travel, a lot more transpacific travel when those flights are half as long as they are today.
Now, 130 overtures have been ordered so far. United, American, JAL out of Japan, they've all said, we're interested, we've placed an order, we want to buy this plane. But keep this in mind, Brian. And again, I'm not trying to downplay the significance of today's milestone for Boom. In the history of aviation, new aircraft are rarely delivered on time. There are delays that happen because you're going through a certification process with a brand new plane, a brand new engine. A lot of things have to happen correctly between now and 2030 in order for the Overture to be delivered on time.
Quickly, best possible timeline?
If we see it in the early 30s, I would say that's pretty good. End of this decade is going to be really tight.
Either way, it's a dream. I get it, but it's still maybe inching a little bit closer. Newark Absolutely. To London in 2.5-3 hours. Sounds cool. Pretty good to me.
Brian, it's yep. there. People want it.
Phil LeBeau, appreciate it. We want you, Phil. Thank you. Folks, thank you all for watching Last Call. As always, have a great weekend. I'm off next week. I'll see you in a week. American Greed is next.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation. Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.